kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Ball squad, ball squad. Shoot for the skill shot, it's a house ball. Ball squad, ball squad. Shoot the green like a mock jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Ben is the sandwich. Show with the milky boy, sandwich the U buffet. Ball squad, ball squad. With a ball squad.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm alive and kicking, which is a lot to say for a day like today.
Yeah, you've been sick the past episodes.
I have been sick. And then today was shot day, too. So, like, I went and took a two-hour nap before we did this.
I am jealous.
I was so tired. I took my shot. About 15 minutes went by, and I was like, well, fuck. Good night.
And then it's nappy time.
Yep, I was gone.
But there's plenty to be excited about today. We are joined by two people. First up, guest co-host Grant Henry. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm great. I think I might take a two-hour nap after this. So
you could take a two-hour we'll nap see. During this.
That'll be fine, too.
And then when you're here, it's always pinball related. Welcoming back to the show, Mel Kirk of Zen. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm awesome. If I went to take a nap, I might not wake up today. So I'm not going to take a nap.
Yeah, things are pretty crazy in the world of Zen, huh?
Just a little. Just a little.
Just a smidge.
Mel, are you in the States or are you with the team overseas? Where are you right now? Are you on Mars? Where's Mel Kirk?
Right now, I'm happy to say I'm actually in my home office. I'm in Northern California.
Nice.
Yeah, it feels like days are few and far between right now, but I am happy to be here.
Well, it is always good to have you on the show. There is a lot to talk about. Some big news in the world of Zen Studios and Zen Pinball and Pinball FX3. You guys are getting into the real pinball table scene.
Yeah, true that. It's been a long time coming, I think. And if you haven't heard the news yet, Williams Bally tables are coming to Pinball FX3 very soon, like next Tuesday. It's already here. So that is happening.
How did this come to be?
Well, it's really a long story. Some of the details I can't exactly share, but I'll just say kind of in a nutshell, that this has been in the works for a really long time. Maybe even longer than my tenure at Zen, which is, you know, going on over 10 years now. And it's been a dream of our founder of Zen Studios, Mr. Joel Kagoshi, who grew up playing pinball, and he's from Budapest. And a lot of our team is over there as well. These guys grew up playing pinball in arcades. And when we started Zen Studios, this was, you know, they always wanted to make pinball games, and they always dreamed that they would be able to do remakes of Williams Bally tables. And so the dream has always been there from the very beginning of the company. Conversations have been had over many, many years. And then I think just there was a intersection or a lining of stars, if you will, of timing, technology, Zen's vision of the future. And here we are. And we were able to get a deal done, a long-term deal with Scientific Games for the entire library. And we're off and running. Next week is our first launch.
The entire library.
Yeah, we have access to any and all games for Williams Bally. And if you haven't seen, our product is going to have both the classic classic version, and then also we're doing remastered versions, which I'll say are kind of like, you know, versions that would play more true to Zen's form and maybe make these games look a little more modern and things moving around on the screens now and new artwork and whatnot. So it's kind of like we've got a new era in front of us for these games.
That is pretty awesome.
Cool. I'm glad you think so.
So it's like two tables in one.
Yeah. Anytime you get one of the Williams tables and FX3, it's going to include both the classic version and the remaster. And we have this really cool feature. You just push a button and the table will transform from old to new or new back to old. And we've also got we've worked up a new physics simulation, which we call Pro Physics, and this is supposed to be really true to form and as close to the real thing as possible. So you get to play the tables either way with those physics, or you can play, if you enjoy Zen's traditional physics and the gameplay that we've provided over the years, you can play the game with those physics as well.
That actually answers a question I had. One of my friends who is a big pinball fan, Tim Ekibis, he was concerned about the physics because he's more of a pinball arcade fan due to the physics. He likes Zen, but he just feels that the physics were a little bit off. How are your realistic physics going to compare to pinball arcade?
I'm not comparing us to pinball arcade at all. I'm comparing us to real world gameplay on a machine that is in good condition, probably more towards brand new condition. Actually, just I think it was last week we put out a video comparing real world machines and our Pro Physics system, and doing all sorts of tricks like flick shots and cradle over unders and stuff like that. It looks good, and I've played, and we've had a lot of feedback during our beta period. I think most people think that we are really, really getting there. So this is real world physics in a simulation in a video game environment, which is really difficult to do. But that's what we're going for, that real real world feel.
Grant, how excited are you?
I'm very excited. I have since you brought up the P word, I just have a couple questions. I just think it's really exciting that you guys have done what you've done between the even the initial beta that you put up and the latest beta. Just what you're doing with physics is very impressive. And I just wanted to ask, it seems like you've done a lot with your physics experiments in a very short period of time. And it makes sense why you do it now, because you're having to, the first thing people are going to do is compare their experience in Zen compared to real life, because these are real tables. But I wanted to ask, why now? Why not before? I know you listen to the community. You guys are great about listening to feedback. You've done that for as long as you've been a company. I know you've heard people say, I'm just not really into Zen. It doesn't feel like a real machine to me. What is it is there a reason that you didn't explore the kind of realistic physics options later? Is it a situation where the tables were already sort of designed for your style of physics as they've been up till now, or is it or was there just not really a reason to dive into physics again up until now?
That's a really good question. The primary reason is because most of our players are not traditional pinball players. Most of these people have never seen a pinball machine. They've never played a pinball machine. They've played video games. They're younger people. They're people who love Star Wars and Marvel and South Park, and they really don't care what a real pinball machine was like. This has been their pinball experience, and so we wanted them to enjoy it and have fun. And we found that the physics that we developed for our game and for our tables allowed people to enjoy the game and have fun and feel like they could accomplish the game and not just have three balls drain super quickly. Real physics play differently. The game is harder. It's more challenging. This is also why Zen's flippers have been a little longer. It goes back to different types of physics and different types of flippers. We always knew we could do a true world simulation. Now that we're going after these games and we're bringing a new crowd and a more hardcore crowd into our game, it would make sense that we give them what they want. We also hear people asking, hey, can you put this new physics simulation in your existing games that you guys have developed over the years? And that is definitely something that is on our priority list. And I think now it makes sense to do that. But it's just our strategy was different. We have a lot, and now on the flip side, we're going to have a huge amount of people that we've brought into pinball, we've made pinball fans this is going to be their first exposure to some of these classic games. They've never heard of Medieval Madness. They don't know what Fishtails is. So we're now going to converge and really bring a huge pinball community together who have different tastes and likes. And now we're going to be able to let them enjoy these games the way that they want to, but either real world physics or more traditional Zen physics.
It's very cool.
Does that make sense?
That's very cool. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So the idea, I guess, is to be able to offer, I think the way it is now, you can choose to play with what you're calling classic single player includes the newer style physics you've developed. And then if you play regular single player with power-ups and stuff, you're playing with your more traditional Zen physics.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Cool.
And cool. Let's not. And before we get too far, I also want to say that there is another difficulty setting for the classic versions of the Williams tables, where we have an IFPA style tournament rule set, which is kind of like the ultimate difficulty. So I don't know if you mess around with that at all, but that's even more difficult. Physics are that, you know, the pro physics, but there's certain things that the IFPA rule set, like the bumpers and all of this stuff that we've actually implemented the game. So you can have three different ways to play the game.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. It feels like going to league. It's mean the way pinball is supposed to be mean. I mean, and you have to make machines. If people are really, really good at this stuff, you have to make the machines mean or the games last for an hour. So that's cool. That's something that I assumed you guys might do later, but that's cool. That's you know, at the outset, you guys are going to offer that to people who are hardcore enough. Joe, are you hardcore enough?
I don't know if I'm hardcore enough. I was actually going to ask for the more casual people, what are the differences between, casual pinball and the IFPA rule set?
Well, the IFPA rule set is going to play like a tournament style, like hardcore. The ball moves much faster. It's very unforgiving. And you'll notice that. And that's the way the pro. So the physics aren't any different. It's just the actual machine, the textures or some of the bumpers or the pieces on the game itself are different. I think that maybe some of the pitch on the table would be different as well. But then on the casual side, if you're just playing single player in a traditional Zen sense, then you're getting Zen physics. There's like maybe a little more suction on the ball. The flow will feel different. So we wanted to make sure that our players, okay, they download Williams Pinball, all of a sudden they're just like, why is this game so hard? I can't do anything, you know? That's not going to, because it feels good. Like they can actually achieve a score that they feel like is worthwhile, or they can see the magical moments in the table happen. Get to a multi-ball. You know, if we brought in a bunch of people who had never played pinball, we'd just let them hit a ball around and with flippers and nothing ever happened, they'd go away really quick. So, anyway, our long-term vision here is that these Williams tables can be enjoyed by anybody who wants to play them. If you want the hardcore experience, you got that. If you are a more casual player, you just want to hit the ball around. You don't exactly know what you're going for, but you want to grow up into a better player. You know, the road is there for you.
Cole, which setting do you think you'll be on?
Is there a super pussy crybaby mode? I've played a lot of pinball and I really enjoy pinball, but I'm not particularly good at purposely hitting shit in pinball. Like I just let it go and see what happens. And then I'm like, yeah, fuck you. Somehow I still managed to get high score.
See, you are who we've been making pinball games for a decade now.
I know. I enjoy them.
Yeah.
They're purposely meant for my ass who can only go like hit the button and hope for what's best.
This is cool. So Grant, our point, like the point I was making earlier, like we have everybody on this podcast that like likes to play different ways, and this game provides that experience.
We're covered, guys.
So Grant, you're the hardcore. I'm like the mid tier player, and Cole, you're the casual.
I am a filthy, filthy casual. I'm a button masher.
Not in a bad way.
I am the button masher.
Which is still
button
good.
Button mashing even worse than casual?
No, that's totally acceptable.
Okay. That's how I get through fighting games, too. You know, you got to do what you can do to win.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
button mashers are gamers, too.
Look. I taught my daughter how to do it, and she pissed off some kid. She goes to an after school place called The Drop, and some kid was playing Mortal Kombat, and he was stuck on a boss, and he couldn't beat it. And I told her, I was like, look, here's how you do it. You just put your finger on the face buttons, your thumb, and you run it in a circle. And while you're doing that, take your other thumb on the analog stick, and you go in a different direction. Nice. She beat the boss, and he was so pissed.
Oh my god.
So it's a very effective message.
Hey, button mashers are gamers too.
I've spent years patenting that formula.
No, I will say playing even in pinball, you might get someone new on a tournament night or something, and all they do is walk up and just sort of hit the buttons over and over again and end up outscoring someone who's you know, got their earbuds and they're all calculated, and you want to make someone mad. You button mash your way to victory versus some serious player.
Because people really get like calculated down to the second on some of those things. Grant probably does. Sure. And he's sitting there really going, well, yeah.
No, I try to look, as long as I just try to look cool while I'm doing it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't actually know how to play the machine. You got to get it down real low and like squint a lot, you know, and then hit the machine and stomp around and, yeah.
Do you tuck a rag into your belt, like your sweat rag?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. And then, you know, you have someone who will take it out and wipe your forehead for you because you're in multi-ball, and, you know.
Yeah.
You got a squirt bottle that they could spray you in the face with.
Yep. Nope, you got it. You nailed it. Yep.
Grant, are you wearing shades and do you bump the table with your hip?
Sure. I'm writing all this down. Yeah.
Suddenly, Grant looks very much like the bullies in the 1980s movies.
That's the idea.
Oh, man. So you mentioned Fish Tales. You mentioned Medieval Madness. What other tables can people expect to play?
Yeah. And just another word on Fish Tales, it's going to be free for everybody. So,
oh, really?
If you're just hearing about pinball, you're like, you know, you've never given the game a shot. You don't know if this is anything you want to do. Download FX3 for free. You'll get Fish Tales for free. The game's, it's completely unlocked. Like, no questions. No, play it for 10 minutes, and then we're going to try to charge you. It's just free. And also, Sorcerer's Lair is free. That's one of Zen's original creations. So there's actually now two free tables in FX, which is awesome.
Will Fish Tales be like a free update to the game, or will people have to find it in the store and download it?
No, it's actually been built into the binary. So now when you download FX3, it'll come already installed.
Nice.
Yep. And yeah, that'll update for you. If you already have FX3, once the update is released, it'll just magically appear.
So, Joe, have you played Fish Tales before?
I can't remember.
It's very. I know you're a Taxi fan.
Yeah,
It's very similar to Taxi. I think you'll dig it.
Nice. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I saw some of the screenshots on the Zen blog, and it looks awesome.
It is my personal all time favorite game. It's the very first pinball game I ever played, and the reason why I love the game. And I do have a broken down Fishtails machine myself, which needs to be fixed. And I just, you know, we knew we needed to give away a free table, so I feel really excited I get to give my favorite game away.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Like, who gets to do that? Who gets to give away their favorite game of all time to everybody? I think it's like a dream come true.
That's fantastic. What drove the decision for the other four tables? I mean, I imagine part of it was you had to have access to these to be able to scan them and everything too. I mean, there's the part which I want to ask about workflow and everything too. But what was the impetus behind the first four here?
Yeah, and just we'll say the other two, Junkyard and the Getaway High Speed 2. So those two will accompany Medieval Madness, and that's Volume 1. And then we just said Fish Tales for free. So these first four were games that we had access to. Immediately. And so, yeah, we were able to, you know, bring them into our workflow really quickly. But these are also just some of the most popular and, I don't know, most desired games out there. They didn't have any third-party licensing issues associated with them, so we didn't have to go through a bunch of business hurdles to get, you know, get these out the door. And these are honestly all fan favorites internally. These are the games that the guys, you know, the dream finally came true. What are we going to work on first? And these were at the very top of the list.
That's super cool. I'm pretty familiar with most of them except for Junkyard. I've played it 2-3 times, but I haven't played it a lot. And I just remember the music being awesome. So I'm excited to spend more time on it.
It's a funny table, good sense of humor. Of course, Medieval Madness is, you know, probably that's
top tier humor.
The cake there, yeah. But yeah, no, Junkyard's a lot of fun. And again, a favorite. We basically, there's the team leads in the pinball. You know, we got to just make these decisions. It was challenging. That our spreadsheet is so long, and there's so many notes by each one about why we should do this one and which one's going to go first and how do we prioritize. But that's the hard, fun part.
Yeah, I'm curious. You guys have been designing pinball for so long, but you have not had to deal with, you know, getting real world objects into your virtual environments yet. You have to, I assume you're stripping these tables, you're scanning parts, you're doing measurements, you're touching up art after you scan it. You know, it's a whole different thing for you. And you have to incorporate ROM sets, I guess, the ROMs from these games and get them to talk to your engine. And what's changed about the workflow? Like what new help have you had to get, and what have you had to learn? What have been the challenges in changing to this new workflow?
Well, luckily we have people in Budapest who are really familiar and really good at taking these machines apart and putting them back together. I remember the first time I walked in and they were pulling apart, I believe it was Medieval Madness, and pieces all over this table, you know, just things torn apart. And like, honestly, I could probably take the game apart, but there's no way in hell I could ever put it back together.
I think we could all take one apart.
And you know, these games like this, we still want to play them afterwards. So it's not like, you know, you just putting it back together is just something we'll do. I mean, some of these machines we're borrowing from the Pinball Museum. Some of them are Zen's personal collection, whatnot. So still got to get played. But here I am. I'm holding the troll, you know, one of the trolls on Medieval Madness. And I'm thinking to myself, how many people in the last, I don't know, decade or whatever, actually still get to hold the pieces that are going on, you know, in these machines. And it just felt really cool, a special moment. But we have to take all those pieces and we got to scan them and 3D model them. And then all the artwork's got to get brought in. The ROMs, like Grant was mentioning, this entire machine has to go digital. And then it has to go, and we work in custom tech with our engine. You know, we've been working on our own engine for pinball over a decade, and so it gets brought into there. But the process was actually not terrible. You know, we're smart. I think the guys on my team are some of the most brilliant people in the world. So it was fairly straightforward. Actually, we didn't have a lot of hiccups, and I actually think that for our first set of tables here, we were very efficient. And I think that the flow is actually going to be quicker to get, say, one Williams game done than it would be to develop one Zen original table, which is great because I know that people want these as quickly as possible. So it really hasn't been too bad. I can't give too much secret sauce.
Of course.
But, you know, I'm really happy with how quickly we got this done. And I don't know, just the quality that we put too. I mean, the presentation is top notch. That's one thing about Zen's game is, you know, we wanted this to shine against what's been out there previously. We wanted it just to be another level. We want the customer service to be there. We want the whole presentation has got to be really, really well done. And of course the physics and all, just everything. So it could have taken, we had estimates, you know, and I was like, well, if that's how long it takes, it's what we're going to do. And I'm happy to say we were much better than that.
Nice. It's good to hear. You mentioned that you're trying to get them out as quick as possible. How frequently can we expect to see Williams releases?
Volume 2 should be here before the end of the year. Cool. We'll hopefully be announcing that in the coming weeks. And
any secret spoilers you could give us about Volume 2?
Oh, I wish. I really just want to tell you. I just want to just spit it out because it's awesome. But what we'll probably do, I think we're going to do like a live... I don't know. Everyone, you know, we're going to streaming nowadays, and we've been really, not surprised, but like we knew that this crowd was going to be engaged and really excited. It is crazy how passionate everyone is. So we're probably going to do some sort of a live stream event from the studio or from the Budapest Pinball Museum, and we'll announce the second pack. And then I'd say Volume 3 will hopefully be here early 2019. And then after that, I'm hoping we can start to get into some licensed tables. Now, the licensed ones are going to come one-offs because just that's the way licensing works. There may be a few cases where we can do a couple packs, you know, which are owned by one IP holder. But for anything that we can just group together, we'll get out in packs, and then otherwise it'll be individual releases. And all that licensed stuff you'll start to see in 2019.
Are you able to talk about any of the licensed tables that you're aiming to try to get into the game, or does that have to kind of stay hush hush until you're ready to announce details?
Joe's asking the hard questions today.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? Like which games already exist that are associated with licenses. So it's not like we're going to be announcing something new. I'll just say there's some Holy Grail moments out there. You know, Indiana Jones has never been done. And Zen has a relationship with Disney and with Lucasfilm. So I think maybe for the first time, you know, it's a possibility like this could really happen. We're thinking about some. There's been a lot that were never brought previously to digital that we've heard from fans that people want, like Congo Demolition Man, some of these. So it'd be awesome to talk to, I just read another one of his books. He's the writer, William Gibson, for Johnny Mnemonic. And I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But there's no license that's untouchable for Zen. We've got a lot of history licensing. I think that's one of our strengths. So my goal is to bring them all.
Which Johnny is a lofty Mnemonic. Goal.
Yeah.
Johnny Mnemonic, the one, maybe the, a case where the pinball machine is probably 100 times as better than the movie. No offense to Keanu or anything. Hackers holds up. I don't know, man. Johnny Mnemonic doesn't hold up. That's a great machine, though. I would love to see that. I would love to see Demo Man. I think Demolition Man, that movie does hold up. That would be fun to see in virtual form, I think. And you could do some really cool, you could zen it up pretty well with your extra design team, extra design elements and stuff. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the really appealing things, especially for some of these classic licenses, because there's always a lot of overhead and lawyers that have to get involved and business people. So anytime you start talking about a new deal like that, there's just a certain amount of cost that comes along with it, not just for Zen, but for the IP owner. And they want to know, well, how many units of this are you going to sell, and how much money can we make, and is it worth it more for, like, if I get my lawyer involved, are we even going to make any money? So now we say, well, hey, we're going to make the classic, but we're going to also make this remastered version for today's audience, and, something that maybe might be out of sight, out of mind, can have a little bit of a resurgence and get some focus on the IP. So it really is a good story, I think, for third parties, and at least that's what we're experiencing so far as we have these discussions.
What kind of changes do you typically make when you go from an original to a remastered version?
Well, that's a good question. I can talk, maybe we'll just talk about Fishtails specifically, because I think that's, playing that. So in Fishtails, we've added an actual 3D fisherman. The guy will, throw the reel out there and cast the line, and he'll catch a fish. And previously, that guy was not on the table. I've given him a name. His name is Fisherman Dave. So
yeah, Dave.
So Fisherman Dave is there. He's catching fish. We were very careful, though. We didn't want to, in traditional Zen games, sometimes these interactive characters and moments actually interfere with gameplay. We did not want to do that with these Williams tables, at least not yet. We wanted to hear the feedback before we took that much liberty. But it just adds a new level of aesthetic, some movement, vibrancy, makes the game feel alive. Also, like particle effects. So water might splash around, whereas before it was just an image of water, but now we actually have water moving. There's sidewall art, whereas before on the machines, it would just be this black surface and be very plain. Now there's actually sidewall art continued from the playfield up the side. So it just looks more alive. Medieval Madness, we animated the dragon. So when you hit multi-ball, that dragon will fly around and breathe fire, and the balls will be on fire. The catapult, instead of just being a static device, actually now throws the ball and it moves. So these are like really, I think they're nice changes. It's not, hopefully not too much, hopefully not too little. But again, this is some of the feedback that we want to hear from people, and let us know if you want us to take it further or if you think it's the right amount.
Are there any limitations on what you could do with the tables from Williams?
Not really. Although, whatever we do, it's going to make sense with the theme, and we're not going to change the rule set. We're not going to completely rebuild the table from scratch. I always go back to this example, like on the extreme with Infinity Gauntlet, we actually flipped the whole table upside down. So, you'll never see that on a Williams machine, I don't think. but that's as crazy. We can get really, really crazy. We can also do mini games, which take you completely out of the pinball experience onto some other complete mini game, like on The Walking Dead. We have cardboard targets of zombies that you shoot, or Family Guy. There's like a platform style thing where you're shooting things. And so you probably won't see that either on Williams.
Makes sense. I do like the fire breathing dragon though.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It adds a lot to it. Like my kid, I have, how old are my kids? 7 and 9, almost 8 and 10. They love our pinball games. And this was one of the tests. Like I put Medieval Madness on for them. They'd never played it. And they were just like, okay, this is okay. But how come nothing's moving? How come there's, it's just kind of bland. And then we put on the remaster for them, and they're like, oh, there we go. So I really do think there's something to be said about the way a new generation is growing up and what they expect out of a game. And if we want them to play these games, then we just got to give them some of this, you know, and then we're going to make sure that pinball stays alive for people who are young now. And that's what we all want.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Fisherman Dave.
He's on there. He's cool.
I like his beard.
Yep.
Oh, man. So what else could you tell us about the three-pack coming out next week?
What else can I tell you? I don't know. Well, we talked about physics. We talked about free table, remastered versions, IFPA rule set. What else? I don't know.
What's the pricing going to be on the packs?
Okay, so the pack is $9.99 for this initial one. And again, that comes with everything. You don't have to buy the classic version or the remaster version. It all comes together. All the games work with the entire FX3 feature set, which is all your single player stuff, like single ball challenge, 5-minute challenge, survival. Also works with user generated tournaments. So if you own these games and you have whether it's a closed group or just an open group, you can make a tournament and anyone can play in it. So there's quite a bit. You know, we give you these pinball tables, and that's great. You could just play them if you want to by yourself, or you can go and do a bunch of challenges or play with the community. And so I think that's what's really cool. That's really what FX3 was designed to be, was a way for you to enjoy pinball games in an unending way with a community. And I'm really excited that we're going to get – I think we're going to see a whole new type of player come into FX3, and I hope that they like what they see with FX3.
Are the classic and the remastered versions going to have separate leaderboards?
Yes, they are.
Those How's are it going to work that you could toggle between them with just a button press? How's that going to handle the leaderboards?
Yeah, well, the button toggle only changes aesthetics. It doesn't change physics. So if you load up single player and you want to play without 3D interactive characters and all the new artwork that we've done, but you want to play with Zen physics, you can. And that'll go to that leaderboard for single player. Or if you want to play a classic single player, which is the pro physics, but you want to play it with the 3D interactive characters and all the new stuff on it, you can do that. But the leaderboard will go to the pro physics leaderboard. So we're separating leaders by physics, because that's where the gameplay difference is.
That makes sense.
After spending some time playing with all of them, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, Grant, you said you were playing the beta stuff, right?
The tournament physics, the difference between the original Zen physics and the tournament physics are, let's just say, night and day. So you're not gonna hang on the traditional leaderboards if you're trying to beat yourself up with tournament physics. So that's cool that you're keeping it separate. Makes sense.
Yeah, and that's also, I think you can maybe see a step towards where we're going with, you know, as an e-sport or as real competition. You have to, you can't mix these two.
No, definitely not. Speaking of e-sports, no, that doesn't work at all. So did you see an article recently about PS4 finally opening multiplayer up to Fortnite, I think it was?
Yeah.
Did you guys hear about this?
Crossplay.
Yep.
Yeah, are you following the mumblings about this, Mel? You
know, this is good news.
Yeah, PS4 is starting to finally, like, chill out and maybe let us all play together. I don't know. I know you guys have
I think using the term chill out might be too excessive for Sony.
Yeah,
allowed Fortnite.
Yeah, I have hopes. I know there's some things you guys have kind of held back on because of you're sort of waiting for everything to play nice. There are features I would love to see in Zen. That, you know, maybe more can happen if PS4 can continue the lightening up process.
I'm very happy
to all play together.
Yeah, I'm so happy. I think all developers, you know, on console are super happy to hear this. We've just touched the surface. Like, we haven't even scratched it. What we can do with multiplayer on pinball. And for us, yeah, we've been waiting for a connected community. Obviously, you know, Switch, Xbox One, and Steam can play together. PS4 and Steam can play together, but it doesn't go PS4, Xbox, Steam, Switch. Once that happens, that'll be awesome. maybe one day you could include mobile into that as well and really have a true global community. Also with your account, possibly with Zen, so that whatever content you're buying is easily, put across whatever device you're playing on.
That would be amazing, because I've bought so many tables on both Xbox and PlayStation. It would be fantastic if I could just have one global library of my tables.
Zen agrees with that. And actually, you've seen us attempt it on our own. It's really funny because in the name of pinball, so many big things have been done that we haven't been given credit for. But backwards compatibility, we did that on console first, and we've been doing it for years and years. And we try to keep as much of the content, as much of the library together from whether it's FX1 to 2 to 3 or even console generations, and these aren't the easy things that we've done, and first parties have been really cool to work with us on it, but we paved the way for all that. And that's just the way Zen thinks. We want players to stay with us over the long term. And in a bigger picture, one account, you buy the table, it doesn't matter where you're playing it, you can access it.
Man, that would be fantastic. There's so many tables I would love to play on my Switch, but I have a hard time rebuying stuff that I already own, if that makes sense.
That's the way I think. I mean, I think about the way that I would want to do things, and it makes sense to me. So yeah, I agree with you.
Speaking of the Switch, are you guys looking forward to that Flip Grip thing that's coming out?
Absolutely. As soon as I saw the Kickstarter go live, I bought it. We have some going. We're in touch with Fangamer, actually, and we're going to have units hopefully soon. We're cooking up some special sauce, and I think the device is awesome.
Special sauce could you cook up with that?
Oh, you just wait.
Yeah, I didn't buy one. I mean, I could still go and pre-order one now. They got delayed, I think, till December or something. But I was trying to find someone on Etsy that made some hackneyed version of this just to like get me by. And I can't. There's nothing really out there that has the. There's nothing that really has the snaps for the controllers on the side like this device does. Just because, I mean, now I can actually have. I mean, the Williams thing is sort of a. I mean, I have all your stuff on PC, and that's normally where I play that, but I would love to have the Williams stuff specifically handheld. And you guys have done the 60 FPS update on Switch for handheld, which looks great.
Yeah.
I also got to finish I never finished building my little Switch pinball machine thing. I changed houses. I've moved, and I have my little, ghetto Switch pinball controller here on the shelf. My Amazon Prime pinball lives, but I never did finish the little cab. So I need to get to work.
Yeah, you got to finish that. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if you had any progress on that.
No. Things happened. Other things unrelated to that. So, but I'll get there.
Did we talk at all about pinball cabinets last time we were on?
I don't know.
We did. Okay.
I've seen Jack Danger streaming some of your. He had some sort of cabinet he was streaming. I've seen like at the conventions you guys have. I've seen your platform running on virtual pin cabs. But aren't you guys doing something official? Don't you have some sort of?
Yeah, actually, I can tell you some really exciting news that happened just last week. We now have our very first commercial unit live in the market. And it's integrated with Embed game systems, and it's living at a casino game room here near me, and it's pretty cool.
Wow.
We're making actual hardware that's integrated with our software, and it's meant to be out in public so people can play games on a machine, whether it's in a barcade or in a game room or Dave & Buster's or something like that,
Wow. So it's like corn op pinball effects table.
Although we don't have any coins, it's all cashless. Like we look at it as a pinball machines of like the future, so we're credit card, Apple Pay, Google Pay, that kind of thing, or Embed. Right. And it's pretty cool. We're kind of operating a game as a service at the arcade level. So the way that we've been running games on phones or consoles for years, we're taking that same mindset and approach to the arcade space.
What's the cost of something like that?
It's actually not too bad. Like we've been selling machines for home use for a while, like VP Cabs. They were on Shark Tank. I think their machines usually are like $3,000 to $5,000 or something. And they also have this Vertigo unit, which is more of an upright for smaller, it's a smaller space. I think that's just, that's a couple thousand. The commercial units are a little bit more, but we have a few different models that we're playing with. Of course, we're early. We're still what I would consider to be beta right now. Yeah, some of them are, you know, like a commercial unit will be more, or if you're an independent location, I think what we're going to do, actually, maybe I shouldn't say it because it's too early, but
say it anyway.
If you have a location, we can talk about it afterward.
My living room.
I have a laundry. I have a laundry room with a pinball machine in it, so I'm technically a commercial establishment. So you're welcome to just drop when you come down. Just bring the big truck. And then,
yeah, how do we get Grant a review unit?
There you go. I'll be your. I'll test the hell out of that thing.
Well, it's possible. Our warehouse down in LA, we have like 170 units that we're prepping. They're all going to be deployed here in the very near future.
Very cool. Any of those make them? Think they'll make some up back to the Bay? I imagine someone's.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, we got some locations scattered out up there for sure.
Including your laundry room.
Yeah, laundry and pinball is like, I have a friend out here that said, I'm going to New York and I'm going to this laundromat that's got, there's a laundry machine. It's not actually a machine, it's a door. And you open it and you go back and there's an arcade back there. And it sounds great. What? I'm like, dude, just come
that's
over.
I got played as a kid.
I got a washing machine right next to a pinball machine. I got you covered. Yeah, come on down.
Nice.
But that is how I played pinball as a kid. My mom worked at a laundromat, and I would go visit her, and there was a couple pinball machines in the back that kids could play while their parents were doing laundry.
Same here. My brother, the machine he bought from out of a laundromat for $250, and it wasn't in the best shape. He's got it fixed, but he's like, you can keep. Well, I don't even have a key for it anymore. You can keep whatever changes in there. So there was like a small quarter mountain in the machine, like, you know, $75 in quarters that he got. But it was a little. It looked like the machine you probably played when you were a kid, Cole. You know what I mean? Like no one had really done much to it since then. But yeah, that's laundromats in the mall.
I feel like the one I played was dinosaur themed.
Hmm.
I don't remember. But I feel like it was dinosaur themed because I remember I was on a huge dinosaur kick, and that's why I loved the machine so much.
What's the table, Grant? Rack your brain.
Trivia.
Mel, like, do you know?
Grant's going to like go stress Google part. This shit after
that. Yeah. I'm trying to think. But Grant, as far as the location, like you're down, you're still, you said you moved, but are you still in the Santa Cruz or Scotts Valley area? Okay. Yeah. So yeah, Boardwalk's got an awesome game room. They still have a lot of. They got pinballs there. You know, they got actual good selection of machines there.
They do. They have. They service them with some frequency, which is nice. And yeah. They got a good collection down there.
Yeah. So that's pretty close by to you.
Yes, it is. Love it.
Good stuff. So what's next with Zen? Are you guys going to keep working on your own tables as well, other licensed properties, or are you guys just focused on Williams for now?
Yeah, I'll give you an overview. Williams is going to take up a lot of our production bandwidth for the next, for the foreseeable future. However, we are still producing Zen original tables and licensed content. We're going to be announcing something early next year for Zen originals. It was actually, we were making a 2-pack, but now it's turned into a 3-pack because we came up with this idea that we absolutely wanted to include. So we're going to announce 3 new tables, Zen originals, early next year. You know, if you know anything about it, we announce something and it comes out shortly after that. So that'll happen. And then we'll be doing more Williams stuff. And we have some licensed stuff that'll hit next year, probably towards the middle part of the year. There's a few licenses I'm talking to right now that we've never worked with before, which I am really, really stoked about. So
you're so good at teasing.
I know. Got it. Just gonna let you know it's coming, man. There's stuff coming.
Good and shit then, coming.
And then what's kind of different, you know, Zen, we're most known for our pinball stuff, no question. We've made other games like Castle Storm or Infinite Mini Golf. So you guys know we have other teams, but we actually have 3 other teams right now at Zen, which are all working on non-pinball games. So the studio has grown quite a bit. We're probably one of the larger independent studios out there now, and we're going to be announcing at least one of these games before the end of the year. And again, like I said, this is non-pinball stuff. And these are games that I'm really excited about, that our teams have grown up now, matured, worked together over a long amount of time, shipped successful games, high quality games. And this is kind of them just saying, hey, we want to make this. I don't want to make a mini golf, or, you know, a game that Mel would say to make. So I just said, all right, guys, let's do it. And I just can't wait to talk about this stuff. So that's what else Zen is working on.
It's a lot of stuff in the works.
Yeah, we're incredibly busy. But I don't know. It's cool to watch. We're definitely evolving. And we're always going to do pinball, and it is our largest team in the studio. But these other projects are going to be really, really great.
Are we going to see any more content for Infinite Mini Golf?
It's a good question. We were talking about it last week, actually. You know, a lot of our licenses are actually, they would really love us to make mini golf content based on their brands. So that might be something that we do.
I would love to buy just more mini golf courses. I appreciate that you have the course creator in the game, and there's so many custom and created courses out there, but I would love to see more designed courses from you guys, because I love the campaign tape courses in the game.
Cool. Yeah, we got really good feedback on it. It sold really well. Everyone seems to enjoy it. That team specifically started working on another project, but we're putting the pieces together to put some things back in motion. So I'm hopeful that that'll be happening soon.
Could we see a console crossplay coming to Infinite Mini Golf?
Well, so course sharing is already cross-platform. Again, with the walled garden of, you know, exception of PlayStation. So when you, all that user generated stuff is already there and shared. But yeah, the features for multiplayer could be much better once we see true cross-platform enabled.
Oh man, the possibilities are endless.
I'll tell you what, that cross-play thing really, for games in general, would be huge. It would be awesome. So I hope that really happens in a meaningful way.
Yeah, we've been harping on Sony quite a bit for their cross-play stance on the show. So hopefully this is them finally coming to their senses, and they're going to open it up to all games and not just Fortnite. But I guess you got to start somewhere.
Well, if you look back, I think Rocket League has been doing this for a while, kind of under the radar.
Rocket League turned it on accident once, and they got caught, and they got made turn it back off.
Oh, is that what happened? Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for clearing that up.
We do have, on Xbox, we have cross-play with Nintendo and PC, but PlayStation put that wall back up. They were like, fuck you guys. Took their rockets and went home.
Took their balls and went home.
Well, I was trying to be nice and not start throwing balls out there. I got through this whole show without making ball jokes, and I was Cole, so proud
Cole,
of me.
What is the induction process for the ball squad? Because Cole has to, isn't this just sort of like hazing or something we do?
Well, she's big into Rocket League, and there's a ball in there, so I think that kind of qualifies for ball squad.
We reviewed Roku Island Express together, so...
That was pinball, indeed.
Team player.
Did you say Mel, Roku?
Did I say Roku? What is the name of the game?
Yoku.
Yoku, oh, yeah.
Yoku. I was trying to get my damn remote working last night.
I was trying to Clearly, be nice and not call you out for that, but did it anyway.
I'm a dick.
No, Roku's Island Express is like, you know, it's their remote...
It's a puzzle remote control simulator, and you're just pressing all the buttons, hoping for the right combination.
It's all purple. Everything's purple.
And, nice. Mel, did you play Yoku?
I have it downloaded on my Switch, and I haven't played it yet. But I've watched a lot of gameplay video. I've talked to the developer, but I can't say that I've actually played it.
It's the first of its kind. I think it was really swell. We enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
it's a really creative layout. Table layout.
You can get out of your next time you fly out to Budapest. If you can get out of your spreadsheets, give it a go on the plane. It'll the flight will fly by. It's good stuff. It's good.
I've had to do that a few times. I really need to do it.
Do you have time for any? Like, that's what I do. I buy a game on the Switch before I fly and don't touch it. This is, happens every single flight. It's fine. It seems to be a thing. Have you had any time to game at all? Like, are you playing anything at all, or is it just
Game time is primarily like, okay, if it's just myself, I'll tell you I'm pretty much exclusively playing Zen stuff, because these other, we have our pinball, but then these three other games I talked about, I have to know everything about them, and I'm knee deep in production, so I'm playing those like crazy. So free time for me means time with my family and my kids, and we've been playing Spider-Man for the last few weeks, like nonstop. This is probably the first game we're going to platinum. We're doing everything. Like, we're in it deep. We're doing everything. It's great. It's fantastic. I love it.
I need to play that so bad.
Mm-hmm. I don't have PlayStation, so I missed out on Spider-Man.
Yeah. But on Switch, so last game we played on Switch is probably, we played Donkey Kong, Tropical Freeze, which, you know, is a remake, but my girls have never played that, and they're a huge... they're just huge first-party Nintendo fans right now. Like, they love anything that Nintendo makes. We're still playing Splatoon like crazy.
Are you looking forward to Super Mario Party?
I think so. I'm a little off the ball, actually, with all the new stuff. I mean, I know Smash is coming. I know Party's coming. But I haven't really kept up on what's new with these and, like, what all the cool stuff is. But it's pretty automatic for us. Just if a new Nintendo game comes out, it's coming to our house.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Can't mess with Nintendo.
What about you guys? What's been being played?
Forza.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to... I haven't been gaming quite as much. I've been playing like small little Switch things. I played a little bit of The Messenger, and I picked up this game called Steridan, which is like a shmup game for Switch, but it's got a killer kind of sludge rock soundtrack. It sounds like Mastodon scored Life Force or something. His music's real good. It's on sale for $4. You guys should pick it up. But other than that, it's like that's poop gaming. That's like, you know, you play for 4 minutes and you move on. I haven't been like, I really need to get, I still have the Xbox One. I need to get Forza, and I really need to get Spider-Man. Those are kind of the two that are hanging over my head. We moved and everything fell apart. I fell off God of War because we moved, and then I didn't play for 2-3 weeks. And then, you know, it's one of those things where you gotta eke your way back into a game. It's not as hard for something like God of War compared to an RPG, but still, I just haven't.
Oh, getting back into RPGs is hell.
Yeah, so I should be able to get back into God of War. I just haven't had the momentum. It's been busy.
Let me tell you something really quick. I'm sitting here. I have God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn Complete Edition, and Nier Automata, all unopened, sitting here. And then if I went outside to the shelf, there's so much more than that. And then there's the whole digital side. And by the way, Grant, I have Runner 3 on my Switch, and I saw him played it along with Yoki's Express and some of the.
So, just collect them, dude. Don't play them. Just collect them. That's how it works.
I'm just turning into the biggest collector, and I need to play these.
Backlog is a bitch.
That's my line.
Speaking of Runner 3, Grant, you did some awesome music for that. When is Grant going to be hired by Zen to do some music?
I know. We need to do it. We've actually talked about it. Grant sent us some really awesome samples. We have access to his library, so I'm hoping that we can make that happen.
He'll do a Runner 3 pinball machine and just take it. It's already
done. That'd be awesome.
It's already done.
I know. Oh, man. Here's my brain, like, you know, not functioning. Who is it? Is it Alex over there?
Yeah. Yep. That's okay. One of the gentlemen.
Yeah. So I know Alex, and we're mutual on many things.
So Runner 3 pinball table confirmed with Grant's music.
This is timing. You know, everything is about timing. That's what I found, because, like, again, I go back to this Williams thing. How did that happen? Well, it's been trying to happen forever, and then all of a sudden the timing was right. And other things we've done, it's always about timing. So, yeah, timing.
Oh, well, my last
timing
question.
And
that
lawyers and insurance and all kinds of shit.
All that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Last question I wanted to ask, I don't know if you can answer this or not, but is there any bad blood between you guys and Farsight over the Williams thing?
I don't know. Not that I've seen, or not that we've expressed to them. I haven't talked to anybody over there in quite a while.
since you and Mike were on together.
Yeah. but you know, this isn't, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Like, they do what they do. We do what we do. I think that there's room for multiple people to be in this business, and competition's good for consumers. It makes both companies make better products, and it's better for players. So I hope that what we do drives them to be better, and what they do drives us to be better.
Yeah, I just saw too. They just released the Stern Arcade VR over there, and it looks really, really good. It's probably the most polished thing I've seen them put out in a long time.
Good.
And so it's like, okay, it's great. So I can rock the Getaway best car pinball game ever on my Switch, and I can play, you know, the newest Star Trek pin over there. So they've got stuff going on. So it's good to see.
Yeah. That's awesome. I wish them nothing but the best. We've always been mutual. It's always been, you know, I think friendly. I've met a lot of people, Bobby and others from their team at events and whatnot. And, you know, it'd be bad if there was only, and the Zachariah guys too, they're really good. Like, I think what some of the things that they're doing are really innovative and fun and fresh. And then on mobile, there's a few really outstanding companies, the Pinball HD guys by GamePROM, you know, so it's good to have more than just one game in town. And yeah, this is just better for everybody.
Still hoping to get Ball Squad episode 2 one of these years.
Ball Squad.
Ball Squad. Grant, Cole, any other questions from you two, or should we wrap this up?
I have Cole, go ahead.
You can go right ahead. I have no other questions. I've just been here to be like, I'm a casual, and I know that balls move around on pinball tables.
Balls. So.
I'm a casual. Thank you for making games for me.
Yeah, basically.
There you go. No, I just have a request. Now that we've got Mel on the phone, this is in the public eye. This is the part where I get out my Christmas list and I just read it from the top to bottom, all the things I want. So are you ready?
I'm going old school, pen and paper. Here we go.
Okay. There's actually only one thing on here, so it won't take long. I think it would be fantastic to have a free camera to check out your machines with, just a free roaming, kind of like you have your little tour at the beginning of a game, but I'd love to be able to kind of peek at the table in more detail, and also be able to have a custom camera where you can set the POV and set the distance and the angle, because I have like a vertical monitor I like to play my pen games on, and I feel like I would love to make small adjustments to a couple of your different camera angles. You've set up some good ones, but I would love to be able to just pick a camera angle. Because Zachariah, I think it's confirmed recently it's Zachariah. I'm probably wrong. They're doing crazy stuff that you can put dirt on the table. You can play your game. You can play your game in a lightning storm. I don't know. It's insane. It's like they've run out of ideas, but it's still in early access. I don't know. But they're the way you can handle a camera is really cool. So that's my put that in the Grant's request list for the Zen people. That's me. That's for me.
It's being added. It'll be added after we're off of here. We have my life is spreadsheets, right? So we've got I'm adding this to the sheet, and we have green, yellow, and red color coding. So I'm gonna put it in there somewhere, and we'll figure out how it gets coded.
Cool.
And you have the free reign to say whatever you want to be added to the list, and you just go with the camera. See, I would go with I want to see an SML pinball table.
I had another idea, but it was way more simple. Here's how it goes, right? Adam's family. You got to license, like, I don't know how many estates that involves, right? Pain in the ass. Just leave Christopher Lloyd out and then put Joe.
Yes.
A little Joe on the electric chair with a light bulb in his mouth, right? This is perfect. And then he can just do his podcast from the chair. From the screen.
Joe, how much for your likeness rights?
Free. just give me a special thanks in the credits. That's all I want.
Awesome. Oh man.
The funny SML thing is, when I was a kid, people used to say I look like Pugsley from the movie. So.
Oh, that's funny.
They could even use my cane as a ramp.
Oh God.
Actually, I think Pugsley was the only one they couldn't get for the last time they did Virtual Pin with Adam's family. So don't even worry about Pugsley. Just get Joe.
Yeah, there you go. I'll even shave so I look more like him. This is ridiculous.
Well, good. We'll need to do official headshots, and we'll need to bring you in, and we'll have your body scanned for, 3D character, and there we go.
Tell me when. I'll make it out there. I'll make something happen.
Joe's got a cat robe.
First time I hugged robe.
Yeah, no cat robe. Yeah, first time I hugged Joe, he was in a robe, I believe. I believe that was your Zangief year. Isn't that you, Zangief, 10 years ago at MAGFest or something? I can't remember.
Was that the first time I met you?
I don't. I really have no idea anymore.
It had to be earlier than that, but I'm sure I did hug you as Zangief.
Yeah, I think I got a great big Russian Joe hug.
Yeah,
great. You're too busy, Mel. But you got to make MAGFest one of these days. You'd have so much fun. The kids would love it if you could drag them out too. It would be a blast.
I believe the last time we talked, you were telling me about this. So, yeah, I'm gonna write that down on a list somewhere
in January.
Okay.
It's like the worst possible time.
Yeah. Right after the holidays.
The worst time to be in the north, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I know we've been chatting for a while. Mel, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
I don't know. I always appreciate the time. I always appreciate anybody who downloads a Zen game. Your support is why we're still here. We always try to listen to you. We always try to make the games better. We're not real hard to reach. So just stay in touch with us, and thank you all so much.
Awesome. Grant, anything else from you?
Getaway's awesome. You guys should buy that. Buy that and play it on Zen's platform with tournament physics. Highly recommended.
I plan on buying it, but I don't know if I'll do it with the tournament physics.
You must. We have to battle online together, so you have to at least give it a shot.
I'll give it a shot just for you.
Yeah, thanks for showing up, Mel, and thanks for all you guys do, and thanks for all the polish you guys give your products. It comes through.
Good. I'm glad you guys enjoy it.
Awesome. Well, Mel, where can people keep up to date with you and Zen and everything else?
Okay, so Zen, we're all over social, Twitter. We're at Zen_Studios. Facebook, just Zen Studios, YouTube, subscribe to our channel. We're putting out a lot more video content than we ever have before. This is to help really visually communicate what we're doing. So I think that's worthwhile to subscribe there. We're on Instagram if you just want statics. I personally, check me out on Twitter. I think I'm Mel G. Kirk. There might be underscores in there somewhere too. I have a weird Twitter name. and our forums and whatnot. So we always take the time to talk to people and answer your questions.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, everyone else, that is it for this part of the show. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more. I'll probably play some more of Grant's music because that's what I do when he's on the show. Because I like you, Grant.
Thanks, buddy.
But we will be back in just a few moments. Mel, do you have any final words to end this?
Peace out, play pinball, enjoy life.
Ball squad. Go for the skill shot, it's a house ball. Ball squad. Shoot the green, lock 'em up, jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Mel is the Zen, Joe with the milky voice, Stemmage the Uber fan. Ball squad. It's a ball squad.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Mel for coming by and joining the show. Definitely keep an eye out for those pinball tables next week. Can't wait for those. Gonna be awesome. Thanks again to Grant as well for joining. Love having him around. Plenty more show to take care of, though. We got some games to talk about. Starting things off, Purnell, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's hot, but cold and not quite chummy. I don't know what I'm saying. Point is, I'm doing all right. Best Buy e-gift cards can bite me, though. How are you doing?
Some storms in the area, but aside from that, doing good. I'm enjoying Forza, and I'm looking forward to some pinball next week.
Yes. I can't remember. Did you Game Pass it or did you go to the store and grab it?
I got the Ultimate Edition. So.
Slickadoodle.
Yeah, boy. I got to get those, the VIP and the car pass and the expansion pass and the bond pack and everything else. So worth it. I love it. Plus, I got to play it since Friday. I had all weekend with the game.
Oh, game that was it? Oh, because the Ultimate Edition lets you get it early?
Yep.
I'm actually kind of okay with that concept. The idea of it getting a little bit earlier. Because, like, on one hand, it's like, oh no, someone's getting a perk ahead of us, but at the same time, everyone's going to get it within 2 weeks or so, a week or two. So, what's hurting anybody for somebody who's like paying that much more to say, hey, here's a perk, you can play it first?
Yeah.
And as long, like, as it's not an egregious amount.
It's like Assassin's Creed just came out on Tuesday for people who bought the gold edition early, where otherwise you got to wait until Friday.
Yeah. See, that's enough time to make it worth it, but not feel like you're getting slapped in the face for not getting the specials.
Very true.
It's all about the art of the balance.
Anyway, you got three games to talk about tonight. Are you ready to get started?
I believe so.
All right. Well, what'd you say?
I was like, what games am I doing? I don't even know.
Well, I will remind you, because the first game to talk about tonight is called Switchblade, developed and published by Lucid Games. It released August 28th on PS4 and Steam Early Access for $19.99. Fight your way up the season ranks to become an online superstar in a spectacular future sport championship. Seamlessly switch between heavily armed high-tech vehicles at any time to create endless tactical choices in frantic 5v5 battle to take down the opposition's towers and claim victory. Purnell, what is Switchblade?
Honestly, it kind of reminded me of a vehicular-based Monday Night Combat, though I guess it should because they're both MOBAs. But in the case of this particular game, instead of being a moderately built TV star, you are a moderately built TV star that drives a truck or a tank or a buggy, depending on what you're trying to work with for this particular moment in the time. So the goal of the game is to march through to the enemy's core of their base and destroy it. But in order to get to the core, you need to actually take miniature vehicles called, I guess they're just mobs. Take your little mob trucks from your base, march them up to the different control towers that are littered throughout the map and have them blast the shields down until they're accessible so that your gunfire can blast their cores. So we're talking like maybe 2 to 3 towers and then a base, and that's the end of the match. So we're thinking, okay, what are you doing then? What is so special about these vehicles? Well, the vehicles, and if you buy the Founders Pack, which is the 1999 that Joe described, you get access to about 16 or 17 different vehicles right off the bat, which is kind of nice and a good way to kind of immediately open up some options.
Yeah, I should go over what's in the Founders Pack, shouldn't I?
Oh, yeah.
Founders Pack includes 16 vehicles plus all future vehicles. So for $20, you're future-proofing yourself. 16 mm-hmm. exclusive Founder Pack vehicle skins, a 3-day battle points bonus boost, which is like the soft currency in the game, and then 500 bit cash, which is the hard currency that you're going to pay real money for.
Yeah, and to me, that's like almost the only thing that messes with my head, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
So as it goes, the vehicles come in one of 5 different classes. There's the fighter class, the scout class, the tank class, artillery class, and support. And each of those vehicles, in addition to just what they can do, they're also balanced by 3 stats: speed, strength, and health. As you can probably guess, the tank has high health and sometimes maybe high strength with low speed. And support has And the scout is like low health and low strength with high speed. But whereas those stats don't factor into are the additional commodities of a vehicle, which is the weapons that they come equipped with. So to go back to our earlier point, the artillery is a long-range vehicle. Every vehicle has one primary weapon that has pretty much like unlimited ammo, 2 sub-weapons that have limited use, like cooldowns and the like, and then a super weapon that has a horrible cooldown. The idea is that, the artillery is going to have a bunch of weapons whose purposes are to fire across long distances. So likely weapons that have, well, vehicle to have low health, high strength, and probably high speed, with the intent being drive somewhere, park yourself, fire off a few volleys, and get the heck out of Dodge. But it's kind of fun to play through the game and realize that you start to come across certain favorite vehicles. Maybe, like, for example, my favorite was one called Thunder Pulse, and it's super, was like a Tesla coil, where once you activated it, thunder would just kind of pulse from the vehicle, and anything that's around it within the race would just pretty much get the crap electrocuted out of it. It was kind of nice. As you play matches, you also accrue experience points, like in-level experience, and as you level up during the match, you'll gain upgrade points, which will allow you to first unlock the different things. So your two sub-weapons can get unlocked immediately, but your super weapon can't get unlocked until you hit level 4 in the match. But it allows you to unlock and then upgrade those things during the level to kind of start kind of focus on what you want to do with your vehicle. And it's not just one vehicle, by the way. I didn't even mention. You actually have two that you can choose from or to start with, because as you play, you choose two vehicles from the roster of 16. And as you're playing the match, if you want to switch vehicles on the fly, you can call in a drop ship to replace your current vehicle with the new one. Now, you can't just do this all willy-nilly, because when the dropship shows up, it takes time. And while the dropship is coming, you can't move. You can still fire a gun and the like, but you are essentially a sitting duck waiting for your replacement to show up. But if you're smart about it, you can time it so that you'll have a new vehicle that does something that you want to do with its own health pool. So if you're about to get the crap rocked out of you, you can find a hidey-ho, swap your vehicle out, and get back into the action. However, unfortunately, in the event that you don't make it, you get the tar blast out of you, which is going to happen. It's that kind of game. You will get launched back to what they call the sin bin. I don't know why they call it the sin bin. Yourself, last I checked, you're supposed to be trying to blow up the enemy base. What is the sin in this game? I don't even know. Point is, it's called the sin bin, and you're stuck waiting to get back in the fight. You can either pay some money, not real money, in-game money that you earn from blowing up enemy vehicles and towers. You can use that money to jump back in, or you can wait the timer out to get respawned. But while you're waiting, should you feel inclined, you can spend any upgrade points you accrued. You can also use that same cash bonus stuff that I mentioned earlier to purchase temporary perks or usable perks on the map, such as an attack slash defense boost, a speed boost, proximity heal ability, stuff like that. And it's, honestly, the game offers up a lot of customization between the vehicles you can get and the different upgrades you can buy at the shop. And don't get me wrong, you can't like mix and match the weapon on the tanks, so what you see is what you get. But you can combine two different vehicles per run based on your design, and then kind of use your upgrade points as you see fit to specialize in certain things. Coupled with the currency purchased upgrades, you can kind of do some nice little specialization work there. And considering the fact that you're going to be playing on 5v5 teams, you're going to also be trying to get the synergy down with your teammates. So last thing I want to mention is the fact that the game does do like an in-game currency system like Joe mentioned earlier. So as you play, as you level up your vehicles, you'll unlock, you know, new, like you'll get bonuses, whether it be like the light currency or the heavy currency. I'm not sure what the descriptor, like you said, they're like Bitcoins and some other coin. I never knew what their names were.
Yeah, just battle points and bit cash.
There we go. You'll get different bits of those as you level up different vehicles. So as you do so, you might want to spend those things. And what you can spend them on are different skins and different like color schemas for your avatar, different skins for the tanks, pretty much all cosmetic stuff. Nothing that really is going to make you a make or break your gameplay session, which I honestly appreciate. Because when I come into games like this, I'd rather just drop a flat amount of money, like say, I don't know, the $20 for the Founders Pack, and never spend another dime, because I'm not down with just randomly throwing money at a game willy-nilly. So the fact that they offer that to you and all that Bitcoin stuff is just for customization stuff, for prettiness. I'm not going to freak about that. I'm perfectly fine with my guy running around with like underwear and Speedos the whole freaking game, my entire time playing it. So my overall impression of the game was that I had fun playing it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not one who plays a ton of MOBAs, so I don't know how derivative this one might be. But I do feel as though the vehicle play is fun. The movement of the vehicles is very snappy. The controls are nice and loose. If you're playing with a good set of people, it can get pretty frantic. The only downside I came across is sometimes the maps feel a bit too big, which could mean that you might have like sections of the map where it's like there's tons of area where there's nothing going on as you're trying to traverse it to get to where you need to be. And then you'll just get to this pocket where everybody's fighting. And it's just like, getting back into the action can be a little on the annoying side because you have to wait for the sin bin time, then get dumped back on the mat, and then drive like three quarters across the mat before you actually engage anybody again. Though I'm going to wager it's also possible that my opponents were just that bad, and if they were making more forward momentum progress, I'd be seeing guys out and about. But that wasn't the case during, honestly, any of my play sessions. So, but even with that said, the game is very much enjoyable. There's a lot of diversity between all the different vehicles in the game. And if they intend to release more, hey, that's more to look forward to in the future. But I was honestly pleased with playing this game. It was fun. Hopefully there's enough of an online presence to keep matches flowing. That's probably the biggest hurdle it might have.
That is my biggest concern with the game. I was talking to you, I was playing it a bit earlier today, and there was a time that I went to do an AI or a versus the AI match against bots, just so I could kind of get the hang of how things are going. And I was waiting for a match. And then it just created my own. So I figure, all right, no one's playing this mode. It'll just be me. Maybe someone else will join in. It ended up being me and four AI bots against five AI bots.
And don't get me wrong,
it's kind of a bummer.
It is a bummer, though. I will admit there is a slight benefit to at least them giving you the AI versus the AI. It means that you're not locked out of playing the game just because humans don't exist. But obviously, I think we both agree, humans are more fun than AI.
Oh yeah, so, and the AI is not the smartest at times. Like they weren't the most challenging opponents to play against. And there were even times where my own teammates were running into me, pushing me out of where I was. Like, I'm lined up, shooting at the turret, working on getting, you know, taking care of that so my little mob bots could go destroy the shield. And they're pushing me out of the way for no reason.
Well, clearly you were blocking their optimal route.
I just very much worry about whether or not there's going to be a big enough online presence with this game to justify buying into it, because after I finished playing, I wanted to do some spectating. They have a broadcast mode in there, which lets you just jump into another game and watch and just enjoy it. And there were zero games going on PS4.
Well, that's one thing I do wonder. Like, there's things that we might not know. Like, I'm not sure. Well, at least I know that we know the PS4 isn't, but why has that only, if it's only on PS4 and Steam, then that is the hiccup. I'm about to say, is there cross-platform play? Or if there is, like, how long has the game been out proper?
Since the end of August.
Oh, yeesh. Yeah, this can be a little problematic. Well, like, this is one of those where it's like, maybe it'll have to be like a leap of faith by fandom, because the product is sound. It just needs the bodies.
Yeah.
So if you're the type of player who has the $20 and they're okay with saying, I'm going to take a gamble on this product, we're told. But I think you could agree with me on this, that the game is definitely fun enough to warrant a purchase.
Oh, yeah.
If you're into MOBAs and you can spare the cash, just know that you're taking a leap of faith on the community.
Yeah, very much so. The game is definitely sound. I wish there was a sensitivity option in there for aiming. I was kind of struggling a bit with the aiming, but that's a minor nitpick. I hope the player base is there.
Yeah, and that's the saddest part of all. We live in an age now where I think I won't go so far to say these guys are probably shooting for esports league bit here, but it all still fits within the same audience. And after seeing how Fortnite did, I think there's a sort of contingent to be the next guy.
Yeah.
Which means everybody's putting their products out, which means that base that exists is going to get spread out. And I feel like, unlike something like, say, then again, maybe not unlike it, but like a fighting game, you got people that can just kind of drop in, drop out, play, whatever. These games require a lot more people to be playing at one time in order to make them really work.
Mm-hmm.
You could have 10 people playing Street Fighter, and that's a number of different permutations and matches. Whereas you have 10 people playing this game, yeah, you got a few permutations, but essentially you still got the same 10 people being tossed between two teams.
Yeah. But aside from the worry about the player base, $20 on this one, what do you think of it?
I think it's a buy it.
I agree. I hope it shows up on Xbox as well. I would have loved to play this on Xbox, but it seems to be only PS4 and Steam for now. So I guess we'll see if it shows up elsewhere.
Well, if it's not a development concern, it might be worth the devs' interest to do that, because going back to the earlier point, crossplay might go work wonders for keeping people playing this game.
Very true. Oh, well, next game to talk about is called Reigns, Kings and Queens, developed by Nerial, published by Devolver Digital, released September 20th on the Switch for $7.99. Reigns, Kings and Queens includes both award-winning games Reigns and Reign Her Majesty. Sit on the throne as a benevolent or malevolent monarch of the modern age and swipe your royal decrees to the left or right to impose your will upon the kingdom. Pernell, what is this game?
This game was something I thought it was going to be pretty stupid. But I had to try it for myself so I could actually give that verdict firsthand. Spoiler alert, this was my attempt at finding a bad review. I failed, though. I legitimately failed. This game has something for it. It is hilarious. Very well,
it's Devolver. It's got to be hilarious.
This is true. But, I mean, depending on the level of hilarity, it could have not been enough to sustain it. But fortunately, it does succeed. If I had to describe this game in one sentence, it would be monarchy tender. A tender monarchy, literally. Because the entire game, and I mean the entire game, is swiping left and right to determine different outcomes. So you're a king or a queen who's on the throne. Guy walks in and says, hi, just saying, our crops are dying and we could really use support from the kingdom. Would you be willing to lend us some money? And you can go yes by swiping right or no by swiping left. If you say yes, the population's happiness goes up, but the kingdom's money would go down. If you say no, obviously the opposite might happen. So take that, but then stretch it between four different categories: religion, population, military strength, and finance. And imagine that you could have a number of different crazy decisions to make, all between matters of pretty much yes and no, that could influence any or all of these things at once. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, I guess it's not so hard. Clearly, the system is to just keep everything as high as possible at all times. Incorrect. That's where this thing is especially hilarious. You can't do too well or too poorly in any category, you lose. Because, to put it in perspective, I had one game where the population loved me so much that to protect me from invaders, they locked me in a tower and I died of starvation. Military gets too powerful, a coup! Take you down! Military becomes too weak, your kingdom gets invaded and sacked! Oh, it's God. Just crazy stuff like that. So, you're doing...
Hello? Nothing. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, me worried. Yeah, but this game is just manic like that. And in addition to it, there is surprisingly an end goal, which I didn't beat because there's a lot going on. So what that would be is that when you lose for the first time, you come to realize that you are also cursed by a demon, probably the devil. It is the devil. Spoiler. And you are cursed to remember and relive your reign as each new person that takes the throne. So when you die as King Ronald, King Ronald II will be born and thrown onto the throne. Spoiler, he becomes you with all of your previous memories. So in some respects, you're ultimately trying to break the curse throughout the game. So they will occasionally give you goals like meet the priest or punch the dog or something like that. Which means throughout all of your decision-making, as you're reading the different requests and proclamations, you're trying to hopefully eventually lead yourself to these different goals. And as you achieve the goals, new decision cards get added to the deck of cards that you're deciding through. So the game keeps expanding and growing as far as your decisions go and the people that are making requests from you and so on and so forth. And for something that's as simple as seriously swiping left and right, this game is a joy to play. It's tender, but better. Yeah, I'm not getting any tail out of it, but I'm not getting any tail out of actual tender either, so it balances out. At least I can laugh at this game. It's an enjoyable romp. I found myself quite entertained by it. It's hard to say how others would feel about it, though, but I think it's one of those games where you kind of have to take a leap and just go, hey, these guys did something different, and the meat is in the writing. And also in just the absurdity of, again, making royal decisions a la tender and trying to manage these stats. It's a surprisingly enjoyable title. I'm not sure how much it costs on the original versions of it, but this one has both the first and the sequel built into it, which is kind of nice.
So overall, $8 on it. What do you think of it?
I think it's a try for sure. I wouldn't say buy it, except it's very niche. But I'm a niche guy, and I loved it. So if you're a niche person, it's likely you buy it. Otherwise, at least give it a try or look it up a little more. But take it from old P. I don't think you'll regret it if you're a niche fan.
Yeah, sounds pretty entertaining. I might have to check this one out myself.
Dog comes in the throne room. Woof, woof. And it's like, it just says woof, woof. And your decisions are like, should I pet this dog? or should I get him kicked out of the throne room? And then that leads down a road to something else. It's crazy, but fun.
Oh, God. Woof, woof. All right. I think you sold me on woof, woof.
He barks.
That's ridiculous. I love it.
So good.
Oh, man. You got one more game to talk about. That is called Alwa's Awakening, developed and published by Elden Pixels, released September 27th on the Switch for $9.99. Use your magic staff and progress through a large interconnected world where you'll solve puzzles, fight enemies, and defeat bosses in order to help free the land of Alwa. Explore and uncover the secrets by using your platforming skills in this challenging and charming 8-bit adventure. Purnell, tell us about Alwa's Awakening.
Spoiler alert, this is also oddly fun. This is the year of indie games. Just accept it and move on with your lives. So this game is very simple in the sense that you wake up, your old lady says, go beat these four guys up and save our kingdom. And you do that. That's your goal. You're running around a bunch of different environments with the obvious goal being to find these four lords to beat them down and take their guarded medallions, which you can then use to access the final area of the game. But in order to do that, you have to power up your special staff and use that to get around and eventually access these bosses. So there are three abilities you can find. I'm not going to say what they are, because even though they're all simple abilities, they're also, it's nice to kind of see them and be like, okay, I can use this to do something here, instead of me telling you what they are and you're kind of just getting spoiled by it. But there are three different abilities, and each one can get upgraded one time. So as you're running around, you'll get an ability which can allow you to access new areas. I guess I'll spoil one of them because I got to say something about the freaking game. So one of the abilities is like the green gemstone, and it allows you to create a block that you can place on the ground. All it does is work as a stationary block. You can use it to block projectiles. You can use it to stand on for a little bit extra height. And once you get the upgraded version of it, it'll float on water. So you can use it as like a water platform, which is kind of nice too. And, of course, like I said, there's two other abilities with upgrades. They can do their own little thing. You can discover those on your own. Also, as you're exploring the game, the main collectible of the game is orbs. And if you find more orbs, depending on how many you get, you'll get an orb level increase. And the specific purpose of that is it allows you to do more damage when you eventually fight the bosses in the game. Because if you don't have a lot of orbs, I wager that bosses can be a bit of an annoyance as you're whittling them down slowly but surely versus beating the living daylights out of them. Some of them are easier than others, too, I'll have to say. I had one boss who gave me a bit of a problem, but my orb level was high enough that once I realized I could stop trying to dodge him, I just pretty much went to a battle of attrition and beat the tar out of him before he killed me. So maybe that was orb level. I don't know. But I still had fun playing it. The overall game is quite enjoyable. The 8-bit music, I'm not going to say you're going to be banging it in your car, but it is an enjoyable listen as you're playing the game. Some tracks might even sound lackluster to start, but they grow on you as you play, as opposed to the other way around, where it starts out meh and just dies and gets worse and worse. So I've actually been enjoying the music, and I enjoy exploring the environments. Zoe herself is a bit on the slow side, and when I say slow, I don't mean she's a turtle, but it's a difference between, like, say, I don't know, a snappy, like, Ninja Gaiden platformer versus something like, I guess, maybe Mighty Bomb Jack, where she moves and you get used to it, but you're kind of wishing, you'll be wishing she could just dash all the time if you have that kind of get there now mentality. There's a lot of secret rooms, you know, walk through walls, just a lot that's going on, and a lot of moments where they actually expect you to combine the abilities to solve a puzzle. Like, you want one, then the other, then another to get it right, just right. Honestly, it's just an enjoyable title. There's nothing about that truly stands out, but I will say that maybe this is where it stands out. I'm just being a doofus. But in this age where everybody's making Metroidvania games, and I've played a number of them, including that Time Spinner game we talked about not too long ago, Chasm I've played Dead Cells. This is the only one of the recent ones that I've gotten to that's actually more focused around puzzle solving and true traversal of the map, as opposed to just cool ways to do combat with enemies. So for me, that's a selling point, because I'm a big fan of solving puzzles and finding ways to get around. Like, I'm the guy that likes Solstice, and I'm the guy that likes Lumo. Whereas someone who may not like those games might shy away from this, because even though you do fight enemies in it, they're more so there's to be a kind of obstacle pains. Like, it might be a guy that's at the edge of a platform, like, crap, I got to make these hops, these precarious leaps, and then land just at the corner of the ledge so I can beat him with the stick so I don't miss the jump and fall into the pit. He's not there to actually hurt you. He's there to prevent you from making the move, which means he can hurt you, but he's not actively trying to do so. He's just like, yo, come try to touch me. I bet you can't. You know, that sort of thing. So honestly, it's a great game. I might be talking a bit in circles because there's not a ton to describe about the game. Just know that there are a number of environments. I think there's like 300 or 400 rooms in the game.
Oh, wow.
And by rooms, I mean individual screens. And you'll be going doing some backtracking. I guess the only gripe I have about the game is that once you get the map, you start walking around, and as you move to different rooms, the map spaces will fill in for you. However, let's say you come across a room that has a orb in it that you can't reach yet, but you might want to come back later. Well, you can't mark your map. The map spot stays highlighted. And if you're the type of guy like me who would occasionally play games like this and go, oh, crap, I didn't want to come here, I'll reset the game and then come back, and that zone won't be filled in yet, so I can, you know, get to it later knowing that it's missing. You know, like, kind of like, if I haven't discovered it, I'll think to come back.
Yeah.
Well, the game keeps track and it still saves your map progression. So even if you haven't saved the game proper, I don't know when it does it, but it still saves your map progress. So if you come back, if you've been to a room, your map will have it saved no matter what. If I'm wrong about this, the devs can say otherwise. But from what I noticed, because I tried it, that's exactly how it works. So your map progress is saved. So once you find a room, it's on your map. So you can't use that tactic to keep track of something you can't access yet. That's my pretty much my only real gripe about the game. Otherwise, I've been having fun with it. I got Dragon Quest XI sitting here. Hell, I had Mega Man 11 today. I haven't even booted it up because I'm still playing this.
Well, then overall, $10. What do you think of it?
I think it's a definite buy. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying discovering all the different abilities. I pretty much have all but the last second ability, and I'm just having fun with it. I'm going to beat it. I'm going to enjoy it. I honestly wish there was a new game plus or something, or an inverted Alwa.
200%. Alwa instead of Alwa.
Ooh, my pronunciation is struggling.
Oh, man. Purnell, it's always good having you on. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Not so much. I mean, just keep your eyes peeled on those indie games, man, because I'm telling you. I was looking at the upcoming releases for the rest of the year, and I'm not going to say that we're slouching by any means. There's a number of quality releases coming out, but I honestly feel like I'm more excited about what indies are going to be coming down the pike than what the main publishers are going to do. Like, I've hit that old man curmudgeon stance now. So, just saying, don't sleep on the indies, guys, and keep listening to this show, because hopefully we'll be giving you more details on other indie games too.
All right, next up, we got Chris Taylor joining. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing all right.
How's things?
Oh, pretty good. It's lots of same old type thing.
You excited to talk about games?
Yeah, let's do that.
You got two to take care of tonight, and the first one is called Magic Cat, developed and published by Togue Productions, released September 20th on the Switch for $4.99. Magic Cat takes players on a quest to retrieve a stolen artifact and explore the astounding magical worlds of the Magic Cat universe. Chris, tell us about Magic Cat.
Magic Cat, yes. So this is one I was pretty excited to check out. I actually think I was planning on buying it before you, got it for me. So, Magic Cat is a retro style side scrolling platformer. Starring the titular Magic Cat, who he's a magical cat. He looks like my cat, actually, which is one of the things I liked. My cat is distinctly unmagical, however.
Aww.
His only special power is insomnia and yowling. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of. One of the things I noticed right away that I liked about this game is that it has this dramatic opening cinematic where it tells you the story of what happens, which is to say that an artifact gets stolen and you have to get it back. But all of the dialogue is just meows. So I knew I was in for a good time here. So yeah, I mean, besides the, so you've got the regular, you know, running, jumping, you know, float jumping, a little bit like Yoshi's Island. You also have a magical, I guess it's like a magic paw shape that you just kind of flick at enemies in an arc. At first I thought they were magical hairballs, but then I realized, oh, they look like cat paws, but you can call them hairballs if you want.
Yeah, we'll go with hairballs.
Yeah, magical hairballs. And you also get skills that you can access with the X button, of which you gain many more as the game progresses. You start off with just a regular dash, and those dashes actually cost magic points, which you find scattered throughout the levels in the form of magic jars. So they give you like 3 each, and then, you know, uses 1 if you use your dash. Interestingly, it costs MP points to actually use the halfway points, the checkpoints in the levels. So that's interesting. But I mean, they give you enough, at least in the early part of the game that I played, to get by. And and your enemies are largely blobs that look a lot like the mutant muds, which is one of my favorites. So what makes this game really stand apart, you know, besides maybe the skill set, is that it actually has like a really interesting, like the level design is really, really good. Like, you know, almost immediately they start to throw puzzles at you with moving platforms that you know, telepathically move and, you know, have to adjust to, you know, get to the higher levels and like have to figure out how to block one and not the other to get, you know, kind of a staircase going kind of thing. And, you know, real, you know, make you think style puzzles, but really, they're not to just get through the level. I'm sure they are later, but initially they're for gaining the bonus red crystals that are hidden throughout the level. So there's 3 in each level, and they actually, like, they usually hide them in plain sight, and they're actually like really challenging to get to even in the earliest levels. So immediately you can find yourself with a nice steep difficulty like that'll make you really think. Or if you just want to bound through the levels and not collect those, then you're perfectly fine doing that as well.
Nice.
However, those red crystals, instead of being simply collectibles, they also let you purchase more skills, and they let you do things like buy a hammer to break through to another set of levels. You know, cool stuff like that. And yeah, this game boasts 63 levels across 7 worlds, which is really hardy for a game that's only $5. And yeah, I mean, besides that, like, you've got like all kinds of gimmicks in the game. You know, it's not just straight up battles, although boss battles, I've fought several already, because each stage actually ends in a boss fight. And they all involve like using sort of the gimmick of the level to defeat the boss. So I really like how they utilize that kind of all the way through and really consistently.
Nice.
Yeah.
Overall sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Love the graphics. They look great. 16-bit, the backgrounds are multi-level. It looks like it could have been a really good, probably European Super Nintendo game, but it actually does kind of show a little bit more modernness, especially with the backgrounds, because the backgrounds are really good. And music's a little weird, also like European Super Nintendo games. But, I mean, I dug it.
Nice. So, overall, $5 on this one. What do you think?
It should have been, like, twice that much, man. Like, I don't know why they're only charging $5 for this game.
Don't give them ideas.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, if you like platformers, especially ones that, you know, give you a lot to think about. And I mean, it stars an adorable cat wizard. I mean, I don't even have to sell you this one. Just go get it. It's $5.
Yeah, can't go wrong with cat wizards.
Yeah. It's really well made. It's not just the neat idea.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
One final game to talk about tonight is called Rise and Shine. developed by Super Awesome Hyperdimensional Mega Team, published by Adult Swim Games, released September 27th on the Switch for $14.99. Welcome to Game Earth, a once peaceful planet now threatened by the warmongering space grunts of next gen. In the aftermath of their devastating first strike, a child named Rise is forced to take on the sacred gun Shine, and with it, the fate of his world. Chris, tell us about Rise and Shine.
Rise and Shine is a pretty interesting one, actually. And I guess this is the second one I've covered from Adult Swim Games. The other was that wacky golf game. But actually, I don't know that I know this developer. Maybe it's the same. I don't think it's the same one.
No, it's not. This, I'm pretty sure this is the only game that they've put out widely. Okay, cool.
All right.
Actually, well, if people want to hear more about Rise and Shine, I might as well plug my own show. Enrique Quartz of Super Awesome Hyperdimensional Mega Team was on the show on episode 248 talking about the game. So go check that out as well.
There you go. All right. And now that you're back, now that you've listened to that entire episode and you've come back here. Okay. So Rise and Shine, actually another side scroller, but this one is actually a run and gun rather than a platformer. And instead of being retro style 16-bit graphics, it is thoroughly modern, like, you know, really, really bright and shiny cartoon graphics. So the story of it is basically follows this little boy called Rise, and you know, the aliens attack and sort of devastate the planet and stuff, Game Earth, as they call it. And in basically the first thing you learn how to do is hide. Like, it actually gives you a brief tutorial and teaches you about shooting and hiding and stuff like that. So, you know, we'll leave that to when you actually play it. So after in the introduction, you kind of hide from one of the brutes and are saved by the legendary hero, who is not at all a Nintendo trademarked elfin character with a master sword, who has a gun. And then basically stuff happens and you end up getting the gun from the legendary hero. And he explains that you have to take it to some kind of king and it will unlock a so-and-so that will save the galaxy, or just the planet, I suppose. Let's say galaxy. Why not? And the gun is actually a sentient being who is called Shine. So that's the Rise and Shine thing, which is funny because actually I was playing Tales of Destiny lately, and that also is a game that features, you know, a hapless youngster and a sarcastic weapon that have to save the world. So this ties in well with that. So basically the process of playing the game is, you know, running and gunning, you know, your left shoulder button, pulls out your gun, and then your right stick aims, and then your right shoulder button fires, which, you know, seems pretty simple, fairly straightforward. But actually you end up getting like a whole bunch of different, let's call them gimmicks again. You know, different styles of bullets and things like that allow you to solve puzzles within these stages. For instance, one of the first things that you get is a sort of kind of like a bullet time bullet that is, say, like time slows way down and you can actually control the movement of the bullet. It's kind of like in Mario Odyssey when you get a hold of a bullet bill. And yeah. You just kind of control the trajectory, but it's still, persistently moving forward. And you almost immediately they start throwing puzzles at you where you have to guide the bullet through like a whole, you know, twisted, a twisted maze to get to a certain point, like to, you know, open a door or something like that. And, you know, then they, then you get like an electric shock, bullet, which disables computers and also, you know, has its own, keys to, you know, other puzzles. And the cool thing is that whenever you get a style of shooting, like the slowdown or a type of bullet, you can actually mix and match them and they become different things. So, you know, you can have the slow bullet time controllable electric shock, which, again, you have to use almost immediately after getting it to solve puzzles. The combat of it is, it's one of those games. So this is like my only slight hang up with it, and that is that the and the game thoroughly warns you that it is a constant death game. That is to say, a silhouette platformer. Like,
yeah.
A lot of it is dying because you didn't see a thing, and then, you know, reload from the checkpoint and then go and, you know, now you know the thing's there so you can avoid it. Not a whole lot comes at you with a lot of warning, especially as you get a little later. And the thing about it, actually I'm going to draw a parallel to Magic Hat, because in Magic Hat, if you die, you actually can expend points that you get throughout the levels in order to instantly revive yourself, and thus saving yourself some load time and some backtracking. This game, like, when you die, it actually has to reload the game. And, you know, if you die, like, a dozen times to the same obstacle, then, you know, it's a dozen times that you have to wait for the loading and then, you know, walk forward a little bit and things like that. So, I would have liked it to be a little faster because the game tells you you're going to die like 100 times. I'm like, well, I'd rather it not have to load every time. But, you know, no getting around that, right?
Yeah.
But other than that, though, it was really fun. I liked it quite a lot, and it did provide a good challenge. And plus, I'm really excited that it advertises that there's a bullet hell mode, which, you know, really amps things up. So, but I've been right now playing in a normal mode, you know, because I'm a noob. And the game makes fun of you for being a noob. Oh, I was going to say, one of the strongest points of this game is that it is full, like, just every scene is rife with old school video game references. I mean, like, within the first 5 minutes of the game, you're going to see a statue of Q-Bert.
Always good.
Always good, yeah. So that's always fun. I do appreciate that in games like this that are, you know, built upon references to other games, that, you know, you get those sight gags like constantly. In fact, and a lot of the ones in this version are, is this a Switch exclusive?
No.
Actually? No. Okay, so I'm not sure how they got around this on other versions, but they do tend to refer a lot to like other Nintendo properties. However, I did notice there was like a faded sign that almost looked like the square, circle, cross, and triangle.
Yeah, there's a lot of references.
Yeah, so I quite like that. I like having those to look for.
Nice. Well, overall, $15 on it. What do you think?
$15. This is a really solid one. If you like, you know, running guns and you like the sort of action puzzles, this is a really good one to go for. It's good for a laugh, and it looks incredible. Like, it really has a great art style, and it's, like I said, the platforming aspect of it's really solid. Of course, it's one of those, because it relies so much on guns, you actually jump by shooting the ground and double jump as well, which is kind of a Yosemite Sam thing, if you ask me. But, yeah, this is a nice, humorous game. You know, it's got the balloons of red paint enemies, so, you know, get ready for a lot of splat stick.
Yeah, earns that M rating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely earns the M rating, but overall I think it's good natured and it's pretty fun. Like I said, the only thing I was you know, a bit bugged by was the load times.
Nice.
Yeah. Well,
Chris, it is always good having you on chatting about these games. Thanks again to Purnell as well for coming on and covering his stuff. And then one more thanks to Mel and Grant for coming on talking pinball. It's been a fun episode. Chris, do you have any final words to end it all? That sounds grim. Holy shit.
Don't end it all. You have so much to live for.